Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, we have Gareth Boyd. I finally got him on the podcast. We've been talking for a while about trying to get him on, but we finally do, and we go into a lot of different topics, mainly around ranking factors, things you can do to help improve your trust signals to Google, his thoughts on EAT. We go into on-page and backlinking off-page, a lot of different things that he likes to do around that side, topical maps, how to generate them, how to use them effectively. It's just a whole hour jam-packed with knowledge bombs for you, especially for anyone looking to improve their niche website. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right. Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, we finally have Gareth Boyd. It's been a while back and forth trying to get you on, but we got you on last minute now. So welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. So, Let's start with a little bit of your background, kind of what you're doing now, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I've been involved with basically internet marketing in particular for some time. So from probably about, I would say, early 2001. So I was only about 9 years old, and basically. I was pestering my brother, who's also in internet marketing. All my brothers are in internet marketing, so I was pestering them from a young age. So, I got on at a very early age, and basically HTML and CSS was basically my second language. Other kids would be learning French and Spanish. I'd be learning HTML. So, pretty much. So that's what I've been doing for a long time through like high school. I don't have any degrees in my name whatsoever. So, this is what I've been spending most of my time doing. And then the past few years, I got out of internet marketing and running predominantly online businesses to run a few coffee shops and restaurants and a hotel at one point as well. So, and then COVID came along, and that changed my perspective and kind of got back online again, a bit more full time again. So it's a pretty big roundabout.
Well diversified.
Yeah, I think that's probably one way to put it. Like, I had a takeaway pizza shop at one point as well, and it was kind of like flipping pizzas whilst building niche sites at the same time. So it's kind of opens your eyes to what does.
No, fair enough. Let's go a little bit into your current portfolio of sites. So we don't have to go, or we don't have to share anything that you don't want to share regarding it, but how many sites are you currently running? Maybe even some traffic stats, just things like that.
Basically, I've got one main site at the minute. It's most sites I have up to about 10 at any point. I get it up to a certain level and sell it. Ideally, that's the target anyway. But the main sort of one at the minute, I'm focusing a lot of time on. I actually started off as sort of a test. Was I picked it up off an Indian guy off one of these flipper sites. I just seen it and I was like, this looks actually pretty fun. let's just buy it and just use it to test stuff on. You know, at that time last year, there was obviously GPT-3 and different models off it coming through. So I was just like, you know, let's give this a go and see what we can really push the boundaries with it. So basically, I in a year, we got it up to roughly about 240,000 visits a month in the space of about 8 months. So,
oh, wow.
So whenever people talk about AI, does not, the massive thing I have, not so much a distaste for, but it's more so, I'm frustrated whenever people talk about AI and they say it's dreadful and all the rest of it, but I think it's fantastic if you actually get the content and then you edit it and further edit it again. I think that makes it sort of like safer in future terms, because you always get people coming on and talking about conch house and things like that, and that their stuff is never going to last. But if you get this like AI foundation content and you further edit it and do citations within it as well and interlink it correctly, you can really build out a really good site, because what you say about what your niche is, I can do the same, except I can produce a heck of a lot more of it.
Mm.
But the difference is you have experience in it and you would be able to obviously have some form of authority over it, whereas I would have to go that extra measure to do that. So we tested a lot with that one. Primarily me, my brother wasn't so much involved with that, but I kind of just pushed it quite a bit to see how much traffic could I really get before Google says, you know, no. And I got a big no in a lot of my sort of sites in October, and but they've came back there this month, like literally 6 out of 10. They've came just like literally just gone bang, back up again. And it's just kind of like, all right, okay, this is good.
Nice.
This is really good. So, and they're predominantly running on ads as well.
Oh, sorry.
They're running basically on all display ads as well.
I see. So with the AI content then, like if I get an article back or I acquire a website and there's content already on the website, going back and editing the content, at least from my perspective, feels harder than just writing it again from scratch myself, not having even seen that content. So how are you going in and doing, I guess, the editing process to change it from a pure AI piece of content to something that's, I guess, rankable in Google?
I don't know, because I can't really say too much about that, because I haven't actually been in that position to do it. But from buying a website that already has AI content on it, but I do know from obviously producing it myself and editing it. But generally speaking, I prefer starting sites from scratch and trying things mm-hmm. that way. And if it sticks, I just go for it. You know, it's just literally all hands on the steering wheel and go for it as much as possible. And not just AI content, because that's like only one of the tiny like signals of ranking, as you know. Obviously, you got so much more. But getting back to that, if I was buying a website and had a load of AI content on it, I'd be very skeptical, because I don't know, you know, like what they've actually done to it, or if they've actually done anything, you know, that's actually got any authority to it, I suppose, or previous experience, probably more so than anything. So I probably avoid that, actually, to be honest.
Let me reframe that just a little as well. So you have your piece of content being generated from the AI. How are you going in and changing it with your editing process to make it so it's good enough to publish on your site?
All right. Well, that's extremely easy. So like, it's generally speaking, it's a niche that I know about, or we have a team of editors that I actually have experience in, and going through it and piece by piece. So finding parts of the article, and obviously whether it's ChatGPT or Jasper or whatever it is, it's going to have tons of factual errors that are just unbelievable. And you get tons of people who just throw it up on the internet. And I think that's really irresponsible, because, you know, especially in some of this sort of like financial or health and well-being, like you should be fact-checking your content. I think that's a sort of like basic anything you should be putting on the internet, especially content-wise, should be fact-checks to be verified if it's actually true. So going through it and saying, is it properly, you know, does this actually make sense dramatically, more so than anything as well? Because you want people to stay on the website as long as possible. And if there's loads of spell mistakes, or you have all these sort of variations of additionally or as well as and things like that, that these AI writers seem to just pump into the content. But if you edit that all out, it's literally like a win to the sales of basically your production of content. You can ramp up your scaling within reason, obviously, you know, because if you're going to start pumping out 500 articles a day, it's just unattainable to keep editing it. It's just not possible. So there's that. And then citations, like, there's quite a few. I think I put a tweet up the other day, and you'd said on it as well, like, replied back to me.
Yeah.
Not that many people tweet me, but it's kind of, sometimes it feels like I'm in my own, like, echo chamber at times. But citations is a massive thing, and I think that's a massive part of the way Google is going to go in the future because of AI content. And it's like, there was a couple of guys that I'd seen on Twitter, and I think it was Glenn Gabe as well, had said about it, was basically, Google's not against AI content. You know, at the end of the day, they are an AI system. And as well as that, they can read AI content. They definitely can. Like, as in, their own language learning system is arguably smarter than ChatGPT. And I think the whole hype with ChatGPT is very overhyped because it's so open. But I think going forward with Google, if you use citations correctly and it is sourcing correctly, I think that's a massive way to show Google that you are actually properly editing your content.
That's an interesting take, because a lot of people will say, you know, outbound links don't really make a difference in terms of maybe ranking factors. Do you want to maybe dive in a little bit for the listeners as well? What you mean by citations within your content? What are you linking to, and essentially, yeah, why?
Well, anybody that says, just to get it out of the way, that says that outbound links is bad, I want to know where you're getting that data from, because if you look at Wikipedia, it's the first port of call. Or it's the first port of call for basically Google to start crawling the internet. And it has a lot of outbound links, last time I checked, as sources. And, you know, they have to use that to verify very, very strictly as well, you know, to verify what you put on Wikipedia, whether James DeLacy is X, Y, and Z, or whether he plays rugby or whatever. There has to be something there to verify that statement. And because the way AI is going, I think that's going to definitely be one of the sort of more signals that will come through to verify that sort of stuff. But to get back to it, outbound links, definitely I don't believe that it's bad practice. I think it's good practice more so than anything. And I think it's something that should be really actually encouraged to do, because, you know, if I'm writing an article about what I think about supplements and all the rest of it, and if you are an authority in your niche, I think it makes sense that I should be linking to someone that actually knows what they're talking about if I mention about you. Do you not think so?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm thinking more in terms of maybe what you're linking to as an authority. Like, for me, I don't link to any other websites as such. So, like, if there's X person saying something about whatever it is, I don't care. I'll only link to essentially published journal articles, and that's it. Like, just that's my outbound linking. But I don't know what's your take then on linking to other authority websites. I know people will link to, like, Wikipedia from their pages, so it looks like they have outbound links to authoritative websites, or they'll link to Forbes or whatever else. Is that anything in that statement?
I don't really see the difference between linking to someone that's lower DR is, but you know, at the end of the day, if they're an authority and you're quoting them or citing their report or statistics as a link, I think they should be linked to. But more so than that is, I don't understand why someone wouldn't link to someone within their niche that's reputable. I think it's probably, it's not it's not a dreadful thing. I know as an SEO, you're kind of thinking, well, I'm giving them a backlink, you know, and maybe in a couple of articles, I'm trying to rank for those same keywords, and you're kind of like, I'm not wanting to give them a backlink. But a lot of people seem to forget is that backlinks fade. Their power fades over time, and there's so much evidence. I think I think it was Kyle Roth that spoke about this a few weeks ago on a podcast. I can't remember what it was, but like backlinks fade, and it's so true because in some of the niches that I'm in, we don't have any right to be ranking whatsoever in certain things. We just do not have it at all. Like, in terms of the sort of like backlinks we have and some of the competitors who've maybe got like 10,000 referring domains, and you're kind of like, how are we beating these guys? You know, but you know, if it was all just purely down to referring domains, we'd lose. We wouldn't even actually get to the first page. So I don't really believe that, but I think giving a good citation or backlink to a source of content is actually a very good thing to be doing, especially with AI content. So, I think it makes sense.
Oh yeah, yeah. So Gareth's encouraging everyone listening, make sure you check out Niche Website Builders and get some links there. But what do you think then is helping your pages rank so well? What is your on-page strategy then that's getting you there without having that backlink profile?
Well, basically, I can remember back in like 2003, 2004, and I had a surfing website, and basically the same things I'm doing today, in theory, I'm kind of thinking back and being like, you know, like this is what I was doing when I was like 13 or 14 years old. You know, what keyword are you targeting? And as well as that, what's on the page? So ultimately, what your H1 is what's in your title tag. The first paragraph, you have the main keyword in the first paragraph, the last paragraph, the main keyword again, then as well as that, looking through what sort of relative things in your head. Now, bearing in mind, back then, you didn't have people also asked. So you kind of had to think to yourself, like, looking back then, you kind of had to think, like, what's the flow of this content going like? So you kind of, you piece it out that sort of way. But back then it was a heck of a lot easier because you could just like, you know, exchange links. But today it's the same sort of practice today, basically, of making your on-page as strong as possible, but in the same sense that it doesn't look stupid, you know, because there's some titles that you're going for a keyword and on-page it just does not make sense whatsoever. So it's kind of making sure at the same stage it just doesn't look stupid, and at the end of the day, you look stupid because it doesn't read well. So the prospective reader is probably looking at it thinking, that doesn't even make sense. I should email this guy because it actually is stupid. So that on page basics, and then as well as that interlinking, and I don't believe in doing silos or anything like that at all, because I just believe in interlinking where it makes sense. Obviously not too many interlinks on the one page, but enough that it makes sense to be linking to those pages, and as well as that, of course, backlinks and external links to obviously good sources. You know, and I think that's like, once you've got those sort of things done on a page, I think you're good to go. I don't think you really need to be, you know, looking too much into it, really, to be honest.
With your internal linking, are you exact match anchoring as much as possible to the relevant pages, or are you doing something different where you're maybe mixing up partials and all sorts of stuff?
Trying to do the same, like if you imagine like you're doing your your backlink building campaigns, basically something similar. So click here, as seen on this page, or these sort of things, so it looks organic. It looks like, you know, because if you go back to like 2008 girl bloggers, they were so far advanced, you know, for back then. Like, as in, these girls had blogs that were so good, like looking back on it. And if they'd done what they were doing then, now a lot of them have gone off to Instagram, understandably, because they probably make a heck of a lot more money from just one Instagram photo. But but back then, like they done stuff so well, like as on this page here and this and this, and as I said in this article, and it looked so organic. But it's kind of obviously, at the end of the day, you're trying to rank in Google, so there's getting a happy medium to it all. And that same thing on page, I try to do in my backlink building campaigns as well. Because, you know, that's backlinking it all together is a totally different subject for me altogether. But it's pretty much the same.
Gotcha. And what are the other... I know you said we were talking yesterday, and you mentioned a few other ranking factors. What are the things you're always looking to do? I mean, you mentioned you have about 10 sites in your portfolio now. What are the things you do across all the sites to set them up to make sure you have, I guess, the eat ready to go for those sites?
Yeah, this whole eat thing, I think, is so stupid. But because I think my brother and I were talking about it a few weeks ago, and we were kind of like, you know, eat is so like stupid because like. It's just like, it seems like, you know, like the Star Wars, the meme of, you know, it's a trap. And it seems like, you know, it's like a version of Google sort of like trap like at times. Because as far as I remember, Google, like going back to 2005 and 2006, and a lot of these like old school SEOs will know what I mean, but it's called trust. And it's something everyone used to go on about is like, how can Google trust your website? And, like, you know, for a long time, it seemed like, you know, we forgot all about that. And then all of a sudden, Google introduced this EAT, and, like, everyone's all, EAT this. And you're kind of like, well, forget about EAT. think about the customer, because Google's coming onto your page, and you're basically trying to make your site trustworthy to a robot as well as customers. And there's tons of ways you can do it, depending on your niche. And... the basics that I always go for is looking at my biggest competitors who are ranking already and looking at what they're doing. And obviously trying to do more than them in terms of if I was a prospective customer. So whether that's a phone number in the footer, whether that's a company address. I know obviously it's a lot of niche site owners, they don't really want to be putting their own home address up and having someone coming around to their house complaining and saying, dude, those supplements were terrible, you know. So, you know, I can understand. So having an address in the footer, about us page, a team page, you know, go to town on it, like editorial guidelines, accessibility, privacy, cookies, you name it, and everything you can, and throw it at it. It's not going to make you rank. It's only a small factor in Google looking at it and saying that, okay, these guys have got this and this. They've got their house together. You know, it looks good. It's not going to rank you. Don't kid yourself, because like EAT is backlinks, really, to be honest. Like EAT is like basically backlinks, because that's trust. Nowadays, but having those things is a signal. It definitely is a signal to say that you've got these things all lined up, and that, you know, you've got everything sort of out there for customers to see, and you're transparent. Because if you started a Google Ads campaign tomorrow morning, Google's going to crawl your website and say, "Where's your phone number? We're not letting you spend money until you've got your phone number and your address on the page." And you kind of have to think to yourself, so this same robot could maybe do that to a website that's trying to rank on Google, you know. So I'm on the fence with basically EAT, but at the same stage, I believe to a certain extent, that's where I stand.
No, fair enough. But a couple of things come to mind there. If, as you mentioned, maybe I'm a new site owner, I don't want to put my own phone number, own address. What can I do? And secondly, what if I'm using a persona? And maybe I don't have an address and I don't have a phone number that I want to put there either. What can be done?
It depends how far you're really wanting to go. So one of these websites in particular that I have, all right, far, okay. As my brother always says, I'm obviously the youngest in the family, so my moral compass is skewed, apparently. So there's it's not black hat, it's just basically... it's so much easier being first than having to go through all the hoops. But telephone numbers. You can do a multitude of different things to get a telephone number, whether that's obviously there's different telephone services. I don't know what way it works in the US, but over here I've got 12 different unique telephone numbers that I use for all the different sites and set it up that way.
Are you paying a monthly plan on them?
Yeah, it just comes through to my mobile. No one rings it. It's Google. It's stupid. Oh, okay. Marketers, like, you know, saying that we'll get you to rank in Google and all the rest off your account. Like, no, it's okay. Thanks. So you get tons of crap that way, but you can turn it off, like, you know. But then there is some interesting. If you've got a telephone number in your page, you can sometimes get a really interesting phone call. You know, you really can. You can get someone like the website I showed you the other day. I think I showed you that one. I'm not sure, but a company rang me up and said, here, look, you know, we're actually really interested in doing something with you. And you're like, all right, cool. Yeah, sure. So just get a telephone number on there. It's not difficult to do. Like, it really isn't. And an address as well. There's tons of mailing addresses. Yet again, in the US, I've got one in US and in Florida. So I've got one there. It's been years since I've been to Florida, but I've got one there. Just do it. It's not complicated. Just type into Google, you know, telephone number, redirect, and then as well as that, if you really want to go to another stage, is go and set up a few citations around the internet of obviously James DeLacy LLC with your address on it to further sort of like social proof it more so than anything, you know, to make it seem legit. Get maybe like a business listing as well on the Google Maps as well with your house address or your business address, wherever it is. So it's not really difficult. Really isn't.
That's fair. And then are you taking it, if you have a persona on a site, are you taking it any further than that in terms of creating, I don't know, maybe like social profiles for the person, trying to get more images, like Photoshop images and all sorts of stuff?
I prefer to steal. It's a gray area. Like, generally speaking, I love to put my own name to my work, but as of late, as I was saying to you before this, I've had to change my picture and on Twitter because, like, there seems to be people that want to try and find, like, what sites I'm involved with or what sites I'm doing and all the rest of it. So I have to go back into the sort of persona mode. But there's certain other sites I don't really care. Like, go for it. You know, that's fine. There's one I've gone to town on. That's actually that one I bought for $150. I created this person. Obviously, she's a girl. I'm a guy. So go figure. I've got long hair, but that doesn't mean obviously that. I've gone to the extent of basically creating every single social profile, letting it age, and then as well as that, there's a few other sort of networks you can get in on Discord, and they'll hack LinkedIn profiles that are dead. You can use that. It's very effective, very, very effective. So basically, going down that rabbit hole of Twitter and LinkedIn profiles, that you can get into those accounts, especially if you manage to pick up a drop domain or something like that. It's absolutely fantastic for that, because chances are it was whatever the drop domain was, is whoever the owner was, has actually got, so say it was jamesdelacy.com, you get that drop domain, find out what the email address was, the original one for, say, the Twitter profile and all the rest of it. You can play around with that all day long, and it works so well. With the persona stuff, I don't think you really need to go to that extent now, though. I really don't.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk to you about that after this anyway. I have a site that is a persona. Yeah. But as far as I've gone is... well, what's that damn site with AI? This person doesn't Dali. Exist or whatever it is. That's as far as I've gone. That person doesn't exist.
Yeah.
.com or whatever. And you just generate faces.
Yeah. Yeah, so a man with a beard. With a hat. Yeah.
So that's as far as I've gone. I've created like a LinkedIn, and then linked the two together, and that was pretty much it. And so I'm thinking, do I need to do more? Because I've only got that one picture. Yeah.
You kind of, if you really want to go, I don't know why anyone really wants to go to town on it, because, like, you know, you're living in an alter life, you know, technically, if you really want, because Google can figure out very easily, you know, if you're using that persona for a Gmail, it can figure out when the last time the Gmail account was open. They can run sort of average details on when was it, like, you know, what's the sort of average open email. It's probably at least every single day, so it can figure those sort of things out. But I don't know, I guess it's questionable whether the whole persona thing is really is sort of like a gray area anymore, because, like, you know, I don't know, I guess for some of my sites anyway that I have personas on, they seem to be doing just fine. You know, but there's a couple of them obviously that have gone to an extent of, you know, creating another person altogether. So yeah. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, I think I need to get some like Harrow links or something with like just name mentions back to the site, because then it's just, if you're being mentioned by that name and then in turn back to the site, then that's a real person then.
Yeah, of course, and I think there's a lot of different Harrow link builders that will nine times out of ten they'll ask you, do you know they'll build a better persona backlink than they will actually an organic one, because they can just, you know, they can change it up.
Yeah, exactly, and Niche Website Builders does that too. So of course, check out Niche
Website Builders. You're getting a lot. You're getting a lot of. You're getting a lot of.
Dude, I'm playing hard, man.
Yeah, you're on commission, aren't you?
Of course. I wish I was on commission, but gotta give the shout out to these Website Builders podcast, so people gotta go get those links. But I know you've been doing a lot of SEO testing as well, and I know one of the things I know you mentioned at the start of the podcast about it doesn't take a year to rank content. Do you want to maybe dive into some of your experiences?
No, yeah, yeah, definitely not content. Like, this is maybe like a sort of like a conversation for longer than an hour, but content or a website does not take a year to rank and get whatever is good results. It just simply doesn't. It really doesn't. It depends on how much velocity of content you can get up that is good quality. And good quality is not just, you know, your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed. It's an abundance of different things, whether it's edited correctly, and as well as that, from the very start, having the foundations of a good website being the About Us page, team, etc., etc. And as well as that, having a good topical map of content. There's tons of guys I see all the time that just start a website and they're like, ooh, look at that. That gets apparently 500 searches a month. Let's go and write an article about that. But you're not on that level. Like, as a new website, you are not on the level to rank for a search query that's getting apparently 500 searches a month. You're not. It's stupid doing it. Yes, I can understand having it on your spreadsheet to do it at some point, or to get it out the door and get it published. But to focus all your time on that sort of stuff is silly. So the way I look at it is basically creating a topical map and looking at your competitors and seeing, what's my competitors ranking for, and what is their keywords that I can rank for? And it's interesting. There's someone on Twitter the other day who was complaining about someone. I'll not mention names, but it was like, you know, they're stealing my keywords, and you're like, no, they're not.
Yeah,
they're just, yeah. It's yeah. Basically, you're kind of like, no, that guy's just doing it right. That's what you do. You know, so again, a really good topical map really sets you up like fantastically, because we've done that time and time again with these sort of smaller niche websites, like that one in particular that I bought for $150, just doing a really good foundational stuff that I knew we could go in and rank for, and then build yourself up the levels, because there's levels of what you can actually rank for. And, you know, whenever you get hit by an update, there's a lot of different reasons why you probably got hit, but chances are it's just you're getting pushed back down to whatever level your website is deemed to be valued at that particular time. So.
Do you want to maybe give maybe an example of a topical map? Because I think some people listening might not quite understand what that is. Maybe we can just use like supplements as an issue, because we mentioned supplements already.
No, well, you're just wanting how the, you're one, map you're wanting look. A free you're wanting a free topical map.
Dude, I'm sorted in supplements, man. I'm sorted in supplements. I'm all good. So, but it's an easy example.
So depends how pretty much how far you want to throw your net out ultimately, because like it's tedious and it's hard work. So I think I'd said to you like the other day, I was like, you know, it's like tears and blood, boring. It's so boring, but it's worth it. So basically looking at the sort of keywords you're wanting to rank for and finding your sort of niches, top three competitors. And it's so easy to find out who your actual real competitor is if you go through a broad core of keywords and be like, you know, so let's use... I don't know. Let's use wine, for example, rather than supplements, because I don't know anything about supplements. So right. For wine, if I go in, if I go through these sort of like long-term keywords and I see these particular sites showing up, you know, all the time, there's a pattern here and here, I know, right, okay, these guys are in my domain. So I want to find out, and I go onto Ahrefs and search them up and look and a massive list of all their keywords. And then you're going to want to break it down. So find, like I said, your level. So whether it's 50 searches a month, 100 searches a month, you know, and stick to that. Like, obviously, Ahrefs and keywords everywhere, it's amazing how bad they are at tracking this stuff. It really is, because something that says it's 100 searches a month could actually be 700. It's crazy, because I've seen it time and time again. You're kind of like, I don't want to say what the keyword was, but it's just kind of like, how does anyone search this, you know, more than 800 times a month? And you're kind of like, well, but if you go through it, so for like, say, red wine, for example, and you go and create your topic, so red wine. So you go down to the bottom of the barrel, and you go down as far as possible that you can try to find out every single piece of content that they've done to do with red wine. So site, go into Google, site colon, whatever their name is, entitle red wine. Find out everything that they've written and that obviously matches up with that sort of search volume. Get it exported into a CSV and then start making your way through down it. And you can see very quickly the sort of like trends of it all. So basically site one has 60 articles. Site 2 has 90 articles, and then site 3 maybe has something like 25. And you can quickly see, whenever you go through their search queries that they're ranking for, which one is sort of ranking more most of the times, and which one is obviously sort of like playing catch up. And if you combine all them together and sort of amalgamate the content, you can quickly catch up on them, on the topical authority. You really can, within that niche of obviously red wine. And bear in mind, red wine is a huge, huge, huge niche. So,
is that one of your portfolio sites? Is it red wine?
No, definitely not. Like I did actually interestingly look at it, but it is humongous. It really is massive. So is food in general. The food niche is just humongous. We looked at it as well. It's just way too big. Way too big.
Okay, so you take these competitor analysis, you put it in an Excel sheet, and you kind of go by search volume, and you're just writing everything from whatever it is, 50 search volume, and then moving up the ranks as you get the completed. Are you ever going after the zero search volume stuff as well?
Yeah, like of course. I don't believe in cannibalization at all. Period. Well, within reason, okay. Of course. Within reason. Let me just put that there before people start hiding me.
Let's go into that.
You know, no, let's not. So basically, if the search intent is sort of abbreviated slightly different, and it makes sense, you know, then of course it makes sense to just keep that, you know, to itself. But there's so many different things. So like, in, can I store red wine in a cupboard? And then can I store red wine in a different sort of cupboard? Does that, would you put that in the same article, or would you put that in a different article?
Well, it depends what's on Google.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, really?
Yeah, I've done similar depending on, so if I had, can you store red wine in a, a short cupboard or a tall cupboard, and the two Google, and yeah, bookcase, and the two,
yeah,
and the two SERPs that I saw had those two articles on them, then yeah. But on that example, you probably find that they're together. And if it's that one seed one ranking, then I'll just put them in the same one. Or yeah. Am I doing that completely wrong?
No. Well, that's the thing. It's like really up to, it's really up to debate, and as well as that, how much you really want to trial it. But it depends how much you can break down into that in terms of, obviously, as boring as it sounds, to do with the bookcase, obviously, but ultimately it really depends on how in depth you can really go within the topic of red wine in a bookcase. But I think, as well as many other SEOs do, you can't rank if you don't have a page for it. And arguably, a page with that query in the title and on the H1 and arguably the first H2, you're not going to rank. That's it. You know, like, you, within reason, obviously, you know, you can have your FAQs.
Yeah.
You can have other H2s, but are you going to really rank, you know, to get traffic? That's the thing I look at. And it's something that we've seen massively working whenever doing these sort of AI tests as well, because you can go to town on it and you can create a lot of content for loads and loads and loads of search queries and questions. And, you know, and as I've seen anyway, there's a lot of content I've done. And even when we got hit by that spam update pretty badly, a lot of that content still ranked really well. And, you know, and everything came back again. So it's, I don't know. It's a case of, just because it works for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you, especially in a different niche, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So I'm gonna have you try solve my conundrum around this. So let's say I'm in the wine niche and I have best red wine as my pillar buyer intent article, and then within that I have all the long tails. So I have best red wine as the top best, and then I have like best red wine for not getting headaches and best red wine for weddings or whatever, and I have those all throughout, and I rank, mm-hmm. say, I don't know, near the top for the best red wine term, but then I rank maybe below top three on all the long tail keywords, but on the first page. So best red wine for weddings, I rank maybe 5-6. Best red wine for not getting headaches, I rank bottom of page one or whatever. Would you then go and write those long tails as separate articles and internally link them all?
Depends on that page. It really depends on that page. So if it's in the FAQ section on that page, that FAQ on that main, the pillar, is getting taken off, and there's going to be a separate article going on that as soon as possible. Because I know for sure, I can't remember which one you used as an example, but if you're ninth on that there, and you guess, if you say this is a wedding occasions one, if you're ninth, it just makes sense to go and create an article targeted to that keyword, because you think of the click-through on it, like the best wines of 2023, you know, something will look at it and will be like, all right, that sounds great, but that's not answering my question, which is, what's the best wines for a wedding occasion? You know, so, you know, it's kind of up for debate, you know, in terms of how far you push it out.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you're still trying to balance that sort of, what NLP on the page you're going for. It has to, you know, all has to semantically make sense as an article, and you do need to have some of those H2s in there, but it really does depend. I hate using that term, you know, but it really, the best time to be doing that sort of stuff is whenever you see it ranking for those keywords, but it's not getting past Say it's sitting on the second page. That's whenever I know for definite that their page needs to be made, and it needs to be made right now. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna have to go back and look at my red wine page, and and have a look there. But does the long tail? Well, does it matter to you then if that long tail keyword you search it, and then all the results are still best red wine? So you search best red wine for weddings, but then all the top results are still just best red wine, best red wine, best red wine, because you've got like Forbes and Parasite ranking for it. Would that change your mind to not write it because Google's ranking those?
No. Like I said, I think some content is not going... What way can I put this? It's not going to sound... basically, some content isn't going to rank. Some content you need to have to show that you're an authority. So, for example, say it was something to do with supplements, there's probably many different things, queries in there that you are never going to rank for. It's just not going to happen because you maybe have offline, bodybuilding.com. There's a whole plethora of different sort of real big niches or big players in the supplement niche. It's not going to happen. But the question I'm going to have for you is basically, would you write that article if you're not going to rank for it?
If I'm not going to rank for it, no. I usually it depends. It kind of depends on if it's a SERP filled with all those DR90s. Then no, I won't write for that. I'll write a long tail version of that and just try potentially rank the C keyword in the future.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense at the same time. Yeah, of course, I agree with that. But I do strongly believe people are too quick to be like, I'm not going to write a page unless I can rank for it. In terms of, you know, I want to be on the first page. And the way I look at it is, because you see it so many times in these sort of authority websites, is Forbes or, let me say, tasteofhome.com. They'll have loads of articles, but there's a lot of that stuff that doesn't ever get any traffic at all. But it does contribute to their overall topic authority, because they're answering that question. Doesn't mean Google doesn't value it to rank it because it's up against so much more, you know, authority domains and whatnot. But Google will look at it definitely and be like, yeah, you've answered this question. You know, you're linking to it and it's linking to other pages. It doesn't rank organically, but you've answered the question. You know, so it definitely contributes towards
authority. What's your take on the content pruning, I guess? Training that people like to do, then they say, okay, this page only gets less than 10 visitors a month, so I'm gonna get rid of it or redirect it or whatever. But obviously you're saying now, it probably depends on the query and page. If it fills out that topic area, you probably want to keep it, right?
Yeah, of course. Like say I have one, I don't know, so say the red wine again, say how do I open a bottle of wine if I don't have a bottle opener, something like that, and say it doesn't rank for it. Do you not think a red wine authority website would be answering that sort of question for their readership? I think they probably should, you know, because everyone at some point is wanting to open a bottle of red wine and they find themselves not having a wine bottle opener, I would imagine. But it's good to be answering those sort of questions, you know. But yes, if you look at a lot of your content and you see it's getting no organic traffic, you definitely should be going back and looking at it and saying, you know, why isn't it ranking? Do we have no sort of links into it? Do we have just terrible on-page SEO? Or, you know, the simple fact is there's no interlinks. So there's a ton of reasons to why it could be possibly going on. But I would be very, very, very careful in deleting content, because I've seen it so many times where someone's just culled maybe 50 pieces of content, and it just happens that there's an update in 2 months or 3 months, and then they're on Twitter complaining that their website's just got spanked, and you're kind of like, you were talking like literally, and you probably know the person I'm talking about, because I think you follow them, and so do I, but he's a smart guy, but like this literally happened last year. He was like, you know, you should cull your content every couple of months and use it for guest posts and all this here. And you're kind of like, yeah, that sounds great, but okay. And then that happened. But as well as that, if you can't get the content to rank on your own website, why the hell would you want to use it as a guest post content?
Oh, that's a good point too. I've been, when I'm running guest posts for some of the vendors that I'm an affiliate for, I'm trying to write stuff that ranks because I essentially make them an affiliate for my stuff.
Yeah, so of course.
I want them to get traffic.
It's not even that, but like once you go off page, like to link building, it's a totally different world. But it's the same sort of, like, Google has not changed in certain things since, like, I've been doing SEO in like the early stages to like now. It's like just totally not changed. You have all these people who go and say backlinks don't work and all the rest of it. You can have topical authority, but I'll tell you one thing, you can have topical authority and loads of links and it works even better. But if you look at like guest posts, if you want to go down this rabbit hole of links, because we do with my agency, my brother and I do, when we have time anyway, we do sort of like link building, but there's not very... We're sort of particular about who we take on board because in terms of, what way would you put it, time, I would suppose, because a lot of people now, they want a link and they want it right now, and they want the best possible link right now, and you're kind of like, that's not going to be possible. But if you take, like, what you just said there now is so true with guest posts, is you should be wanting your guest posts to rank. Because for me, I do not want to go and pay for a link unless it's going to pass a lot of different signals. And one being is that the website can rank, because then it's kind of a good it's a good sign if that page gets organic traffic and it just happens to be it's linking to me. It's great. And the same goes for link inserts. Or I think it's called niche edits now. I can't remember. I can't keep up with it anymore.
Yeah, either or. Either or. So how are you finding these sites, I guess, that you deem worthy to purchase links on? Because, man, there's so much crap out there. It's crazy. It's almost like, and the ones that you want links from don't usually sell links. It's more of a relationship. Like, you know, if you're actually... in a working relationship with their other business and stuff, yeah, they're more than happy to, but outside of that, it'd be pretty difficult.
Well, say for you, for example, that there's tons of ways for yourself. So one in particular, so you're obviously in the supplement business and you obviously have a lot of experience. So sometimes you can actually get really good links with actually talking to, whether it's the editor themselves or whether it's their team, and be upfront about it and be like, look, I'm doing this to get a backlink, but ultimately I can get articles to rank on Google and I want to produce a piece of content that's going to rank for you. So this is mutually benefit. Pretty much it mutually benefits both of us. So, and if you have to pay, whatever, do it. But like at the same stage, you often find that you have to negotiate a bit more now, because every chump knows that links are valuable, and like even the sort of girl bloggers, like, as in they're charging like £100 and they've got terrible traffic and they're and they're like only getting like 10,000 visits a month. You're kind of like, yeah, okay, no problem. I'm gonna avoid that one. But yeah, so guest posting, I don't do too much of it. My experience of guest posting, I think Penguin finished it for me a long time ago. I remember my brother and I actually, I was working for my brother at the time, and it was a massive e-commerce store that he was the head of SEO for at the time, and we were pushing out maybe about 25 to 30 guest posts a day, and back then it was absolutely nuts. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe more. I remember it was one time we were in Portugal. We were pushing out at least about 12 to 20 guest posts a day. I can remember vividly. And
holy shit.
Think about it. Yeah, and some of the blogs you see Dawson about today, they're still accepting guest posts. kind of like, oh my word, I've been there and done that with them, and it's total garbage. It really is. But LinkedIn search, I'm a massive fan of LinkedIn search because there's so much you can do with that.
In terms of, I guess, why link insertions over the guest post then? Is it just because you can go in and kind of just add your link wherever you want? You can kind of choose the most powerful, or potentially choose the most powerful page?
I think it's more so to get really... Well, with basically, with link inserts, it's really about, you know, probably yourself too well about it, where people will just give me a link insert in that article and, you know, it's sort of relevant to my niche of supplements or wine. So therefore, how much is it? Okay, stick it on, exact match domain, done. Right, that's that task done with. Now I can get on with buying more crap. So, whereas I take a bit more of a sort of analytical look at it in the sense of, hence our agency name, Forte Analytica. But the way we look at it with link inserts is, so the same way we produce content is when you update a page, Google comes back and looks at that page and they can see via schema that it was updated. And so you take some of this, some of the link inserts you can find yourself getting onto, any blog out there, and Google knows whenever a link has been added to it. Like, it just simply does. And if you imagine all of a sudden, jamessupplements.com is now being linked to, and it doesn't look natural whatsoever, like, you could be paying $150, $250, $350 for a link that's actually not going to actually pass value, because Google will look at it and be like, yeah, we know that's, you know, sort of suspicious, so we'll not pass any value. So you have to be, like, really particular about it, and it's, I think people are kind of annoyed whenever I suggest this to them, because there's quite a few different people have asked me to do stuff for them, but they're like, no, we're running really exact match backlinks. And I'm like, all right, well, like, I wouldn't suggest doing that. But if you imagine getting not linked straight into your commercial page, but into your article page, and you use the anchors such as view this report, or as per the statistics, or we've updated this article as per this statistic by James DeLacy at blah, blah, blah. Mm. You know, you throw that sort of stuff in there so it makes the update on the page makes sense. You know, because you have to bear in mind, you've got a link insert onto this page, and it's now said on the page that it's been last updated on whatever date, and there's now a link happened to be just appeared miraculously, and no other content has changed on it, just a link has appeared. So you have to make it justified, you know, for that link to appear, and it can be very powerful if you can do it correctly. And if you have, like, a statistics page that you're throwing a lot of links into, you can do that really well, you know, because it makes sense to be updating a page to link to someone else. I guess like a citation, nearly.
Mm. No, that makes a lot of sense too. Rather than just having that hyperlink to your site, have the actual "we've updated this page." Yeah. Okay, now that I like that.
Yes. So it's like, you know, what way would you put it? You have to kind of put yourself into the perspective of what Google would be really looking at and be like, you know, how can we try to identify these link inserts? Because they've done a really top-notch job over the years of really spotting it. And now it's a case of, there's a couple of weeks ago, someone came to me and said, you know, would you be interested in buying a link on our website? And I was like, right, looked it up, it's in our niche. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. Course, how much do you want? And they were like, you know, we'll put it in this article here. And I was like, let me see, I'll try and find something for it. But they were sort of like suggesting we'll go for an exact match to your domain name. And I was like, no, just literally change this here blurb here for me and say as per statistics on whatever website we linked it to, our sort of niche statistics article. And it works so well. It just looks organic. Because if you put yourself in their perspective, you would do that. you know, if you were actually updating your content and if you had something new to say about the content and you were going to use a citation to verify it, it makes sense to do it.
Now that makes complete sense. That makes complete sense. I really like that that little strategy there. But we've pretty much come to the hour here, Gareth. If anyone wants to follow you, find you, what you're doing, I know you're trying to become a little more anonymous on the internet, but still showing your face on this podcast. Where can they find you?
I know. I'll need to get a cap on or something. At the same time, I don't really care too much about anonymity or whatever way you want to put it, but I just kind of find it funny. Sometimes people say there's a cat as your avatar. So you can find me on Gareth A. Boyd on Twitter. Then we have our website at forteanalytica.co.uk. There's barely anything on that at the minute, but it's kind of funny that it ranks fairly well for certain keywords. Just to be clear, whenever people look it up and all the rest of it, it started as a bit of a joke to kind of see if we could rank against sort of like other Northern Irish local SEO companies. So that's the story about that. So yeah.
Oh, perfect. We'll link all that up in the description anyway, but thanks for coming on, Gareth. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Glad to be here. And thanks again.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.